Hello and welcome to Strat News Global. I'm Surya Gangadharan. The recent exchange of hostilities between Iran and Pakistan in Balochistan, does it suggest an expansion of the Gaza war into our region? These are some of the issues we tackle in this interview with Tilak Devashar, formerly of the Cabinet Secretariat and an author on Balochistan. This exchange of things that went on, is it new? Has it happened before? And was it at the same scale?
It's not new. It has happened in the past. There was an incident in 2013 when Iran had launched missiles against a suspected camp of the Iranian Baloch in Kerch, about 40 or 50 miles inside Pakistan. It has again happened in 2017 when they attacked in Panjgaur. And Pakistan protested. Pakistan has shot down a couple of drones, Iranian drones, but it never reached any kind of threshold. Both countries kept it below the threshold, didn't make too much of a noise for too long. So this time, these incidents, which happened on 16th and 18th of January, are unprecedented to that extent. And because Iran went out in a fairly big way and announced it, and as did Pakistan, and then Pakistan also retaliated. So this scale of attacks against each other are unprecedented.
We don't hear very much about what goes on in Iranian Balochistan, but is the level of dissatisfaction there with Tehran of the same level that you're seeing in the Pakistani half of Balochistan?
You see, in the case of the Pakistani half of Balochistan, the resentment and protests began almost immediately in March 1948 after the forcible accession of the princely state of Kalat, as Balochistan was then called. And it was the Khan's brother who immediately went into revolt, and his insurgency lasted for about 2 years. That was in 1948. Then there was another insurgency in 1958, 1962, 1973-77, and the current insurgency, which started sometime in 2003-2004 and has been continuing for the last almost 20 years. So the scale of the insurgency has been much longer, more prolonged, and has now spread to different areas of Pakistan and Balochistan. In the case of Iran, there was resentment against the Shah's regime, but it went to a different scale after the Iranian Revolution of 1979, when the Shiite regime really cracked down very in a very harsh manner against the Sunni Baloch. And that led to the creation of, pushback organizations among the Iranian Baloch. And they were initially nationalists and soon adopted a sectarian stand because of the pressure from the Sunni Iranian regime. So that's why you don't... Sorry?
You mean the Shia Iranian regime?
Yeah, the Shia Iranian regime. So we don't hear much of it because of the media clampdown in Iran. And it has not been so long-lasting as the Pakistani Baloch insurgency. But it is certainly there. There's a lot of resentment among the Iranian Baloch as much as there is amongst the Pakistani Baloch.
So Sistan has always been a part of Iran for... was Balochistan ever united?
Yeah. You see, now, this is the interesting thing, which, again, the British are responsible. Whenever they have gone, they're partitioned, So... the first sort of Kalat Confederacy, the Baloch Confederacy goes back to the 12th century, then 15th century. But the first Kalat Confederacy was in the 17th century. And the 18th century systems of governance started happening. Initially, Kalat was under the control of first Persia, Nader Shah, and then the Afghanistan, Ahmed Shah Durrani. But then the Khan of Kalat broke away and became independent till the time the British came. After the British had taken control, they partitioned Balochistan for the sake of the great game. They didn't want Russia coming in towards India, so as to appease Iran about almost more than one-fourth of the territory of Kalat was partitioned and handed over to Persia by called the Goldsmith Line. You have the Durand Line on the other frontier, And here you have the Goldsmith lines. 1/4 of it went in 1871. There were further adjustments in about the 1890s and early 1900s when additional portions were given to Persia and small portions were also given to Afghanistan. So Kalat really became truncated. And that's why you have a problem of the Baloch in Iran. Otherwise, they were all part of Kalat, the princely state of Kalat.
So do they cooperate, the Baloch Liberation Army, Baloch Liberation Front, and whatever groups there are in Sistan?
You see, at one time, the agenda of the Baloch groups in Pakistan was Greater Balochistan, which incorporated parts of Iran and parts of Afghanistan. But that has sort of underplayed. So they don't talk about a Greater Balochistan anymore. So yes, they may seek help or sanctuary, but there is not much of an interaction in terms of a Greater Balochistan movement. That sort of died out some time ago. Therefore, you'll find that Iran is not really worried about separatism of the Baloch from Pakistan, just as Pakistan is not really concerned about nationalism from the Iranian Baloch because they've gone the sectarian way rather than the nationalist way.
What about in Afghanistan? Is there any Baloch sentiment there?
You see, it's very limited. There are pockets of Baloch in Helmand, in Nimroz, in Farah, and in Kandahar, but they are about 200,000-250,000. Not a strong mass. And besides, they're also Sunni, just like the Pashtuns in these areas are. So there's no persecution of Baloch as Baloch. So they don't have an issue. In fact, at one time, there were people in Afghanistan who said that these were the territories of Ahmad Shah Durrani. So they had talked about a greater Afghanistan, incorporating Balochistan with Afghanistan. You know,
I see.
So at one time, you had a, the Baloch talking about greater Balochistan, and then you had some Afghans talking about a greater Afghanistan. No, these are all ancient lands. And because they were partitioned by the British for their sort of great game, they've left behind a lot of unsettled issues.
Would you say the issues in Pakistani Balochistan are in that sense live and more demand immediate kind of attention?
Yes, I think so. You see, because the Baloch did not accept the forcible accession of Kalat. And they broke out in insurgency straight away. And there have been, whenever the Baloch have felt strong enough, they've broken out into insurgency. Chali, Pakistan, then look, we don't accept merger or a situation in Pakistan. So first was a forcible accession. Then the way Pakistan or the Punjabi elements in the, Pakistan have treated Balochistan as a colony, whether it is socio-economic development, whether it is the political empowerment, now these Chinese projects. So the Baloch feel they've been pushed to the wall, that they are now going to become marginalized in their own state. They'll become a minority with the influx of Chinese, the influx of Punjabis and other people. They're going to become a minority in their own province. So they feel that the only way out is separatism. You see, the Baloch movement is divided into two broad groups. One are the armed Baloch groups who feel there is no point talking to the Pakistan government. They have tried it in the past. There's no point talking to them anymore because their demands are not going to be conceded politically by the Pakistan government. The second group are the Baloch politicians who believe that it is still possible to get their, you know, their rights within the political framework of Pakistan. So they participate in elections. They are represented in Quetta. They have some seats in the National Assembly. But now what is the interesting thing that has happened is that a third element has come to the fore, which is civil society. You know, for the last almost 2 months, there was this long march from Turbat, then to Quetta, and now in Islamabad. There's been 15 days or so in Islamabad, protesting against enforced disappearances and extrajudicial killings. You know, Balochistan have been the worst sufferers because the security forces have total impunity. Just go and pick up somebody, they torture him. You know, people have been missing for the last 18 years, last 14 years. A woman was saying she doesn't know whether she's a widow or her husband is still alive. Girls as young, you know, 12, 13-year-old girls have been protesting for the last 15 years because they don't know whether their fathers or brothers are alive. This lady who's come to the fore, a doctor, she's a medical doctor, Mahrang Baloch. She has been on the streets since the age of 13. And she is very articulate, very determined, very tough and brave. And she says that, you know, they can't scare us. If your family members have been missing for the last 14 years, what more are you to scare us with? And this has caught the imagination of the world, because the first time ever, the Baloch women, who are, you know, very conservative, have now come to the streets because their menfolk are missing. And they are leading it. And now this has led to protests all over Balochistan and gradually in other parts, in Karachi, in the Baloch areas of Punjab and things like that. The Pashtuns are supporting them too, because Pashtuns also have this Pashtun Tahafuz movement, which is also a civil society movement, protesting against their being treated as cannon fodder for terrorism and for Pakistan's foreign policy objectives. So this is a new element in the Baloch movement, that you now have an emerging civil society movement, which is difficult. See, the Pakistan army just has one playbook, which is to crack down. Yeah. They did that in Bangladesh, we know with what results, East Pakistan did. Mm. And they're doing the same thing with the PTM. As the saying goes, that if all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. So there's just no to smash. They can't deal with a civil society movement. They don't know what to do. You know, they say, I mean, how come? You know, what do you do with this? Because their tactic is, you know, to pick up people, kill them, or shoot them, or whatever. They can't do this because it's being led by women. And the international attention is now focused on this. Several countries are talking about it. The UN is talking about it. So they are finding it very difficult. So they try and disrupt it. They don't allow blankets. You know, where they are protesting outside the press club, and bitterly cold in Islamabad. So they don't allow them heating. They don't allow them food to come in at times. They take away their speakers and sound systems. So this is an important element in the whole Baloch movement. And we need to see how it sort of develops. If it ties up with the Pashtuns, PTM in a stronger, and they both start protesting jointly, it could become problematic for Pakistan.
Does it resonate outside? You know, like the Tibetans, they've been around for a long time. The Chinese occupation is old. Everybody knows about it. But somehow, it doesn't resonate. It doesn't lead to some, you know?
Yeah. The reason is, you know, the Baloch have 44% of Pakistan's land area, but just about 4 to 5% of the population. So they are not a critical mass. The diaspora, Baloch diaspora, is there, but not in such large numbers. So they do protest in London, they do protest in the US, in Germany, they come to Geneva. Gradually, it is resonating. You know, there was a, for example, in the British Parliament, one of the MPs put forward an early day motion. I think the Irish Parliament, European Union has taken note of it, and they have warned Pakistan that GSP Plus is dependent on human rights, respect for human rights, and the stopping this extrajudicial killings. You know, the climate activist Greta Thunberg has tweeted in their favor. So gradually they are attracting international attention. It's not to the same extent, certainly nowhere near what the Tibetans' cause is. But, you know, because they're starting, and Pakistan has clamped a lid on media reportage from Baluchistan. It's only able to get out. Earlier also there were long marches. There was a Mama Kadir who left a long march in 2014, but it didn't get that kind of resonance as it has got now, primarily because of the women being in front and being very tough and not being scared. So I think it will resonate abroad also, as people become more and more aware of what Pakistan has been doing over the decades in Balochistan.
Assuming that there is a kind of an alliance between the Baloch and the Pashtun, that makes it a huge block, you know, against the authorities in Islamabad. You think the military, then all gloves are off as far as the army is concerned?
You see, the gloves will be off because the TTP, the Tehrik-e-Taliban Pakistan, also established linkages with some Baloch armed groups. So they are sharing resources. They got territory, you know, space in Balochistan, and the Baloch are getting advanced weapons, which the Americans had left behind in Afghanistan. But on the civil society, so the army can tackle that. They can go after them in, you know, intelligence operations or shoot their way out of it. But where civil society movements are concerned, where the PTM and the what's called the Baloch Yakjeti Council, who's leading the protest committee, I think, Baloch Yakjeti Committee. If they were to join hand and stage joint demonstration, Pakistan Army will try and disrupt it, arrest the leaders, not allow the march to proceed. But I think the judiciary plays an important role. And there's some people from Punjab also who are saying, why are you doing this? Then Pakistan Army will find it very difficult to have a sustained crackdown. Because it's a human rights. You see, human rights issues are something you just can't, and people know that, you know, the army has picked up people and their tortured bodies end up dead after a couple of months or after a couple of years. So that is something which is totally unpalatable to the, you know, the civilized world. I mean, you should hear these people talk, you know, thanks to social media, they're alive. Their activities are alive because of the social media. Though there's a media clampdown, media is coming out, newspapers are coming out, and very sort of brave Pakistani journalists take their interviews for YouTube and for their own channels. So again, you know, sensitization is taking place even in Pakistan. And that's how the army is finding it difficult to control.
You know, Tilak, more than a decade ago, perhaps during the younger George Bush's time, when the neocons were around in the US, there was a map brought out by, I think, the US Ralph Army Peters. Magazine, which Ralph saw Baluchistan, a lot of other places as independent entities, you know. You think somewhere up there in the US, these kind of ideas still hold true?
It's very difficult to say what is the kind of support this has in the US permanent establishment. There'll be people, you know, who can float ideas and things. But what is the permanent establishment? I think Balochistan for them would be a low priority because the greater priority has always been Pakistan. You know, unified Pakistan, who's helped them against the Soviet Union, helped them in the war of terror, helped them against Russia. So they would not like the British. You see, at one time, the British had encouraged the independence of Kalat. But once they realized that Pakistan can serve their cause much better, in fact, the Imperial Chiefs of Staff came out with this formulation that in the whole of the subcontinent, Pakistan is a strategic territory which would serve British interests. Once that was laid down policy, there was a telegram from London to the British High Commissioner in Karachi that tell Jinnah not to accept Kalat's independence. That's when Jinnah also changed his mind, and then he forced the accession. Similarly, you know, in Gilgit, a similar kind of a thing. There was one time where the governor, Olaf Caro, he even suggested that Britain should hold on to a sliver of territory in NWFP and Balochistan for the sake of their own interests. So they were looking for their interests. So I'm sure the US will follow a similar kind of practice that, you know, Pakistan can serve their interests much better than, let's say, a Balochistan.
Tough.
In fact, you know, the first time the late Henry Kissinger visited Pakistan was somewhere in the 60s, and the 62 insurgency was going on. And somebody asked him this question, that what do you think of the insurgency in Balochistan? He said, I won't know anything about the Baloch insurgency even if it hit me in the face. So I've quoted this in my Balochistan book. And when he was here in Delhi some time ago, a couple of years ago, I showed him the reference in my book. And he said, yes, I remember. He said, I almost got sacked by my university for having made that comment. So, you know, Balochistan doesn't resonate. A couple of people, excellent American authors, have written about Balochistan, but it does not really resonate in the permanent US establishment or even among think tanks. It's not a critical mass as yet.
So I come to my last question. We looked at how the Americans see this. What about us? What are we doing there? Or what are we not doing?
You know, if we just look at the map. We don't share any land access. Border. Yeah, we don't share any access. So, and it's an international, you know, go by the book as far as international relations are concerned. So there's very little that we can do. But that's as far as the government is concerned. But I always tell people who ask this question that as concerned citizens of the neighborhood, there's no reason why individuals, you know, cannot follow Baloch groups, individuals, tweet or retweet whatever they are saying on social media. I think Indians need to be far more active on social media where issues of human rights are concerned. If anything happens in India, you'll find that the Pakistani will come down on you like a ton of bricks.
Yeah.
You know? poor some cricketer dropped a catch, and everybody got after him that, you know, he was, you know, all kinds of, we lack that kind of empathy and that kind of seriousness. So we should take up the Baloch cause. Individuals, why the government? The government will do what it has to do as per international norms. But the people of India should certainly, and through your medium, you know, follow Baloch Code, follow Pashtun groups, articulate their issues whenever there are human rights violations. Why not?
Tilak, thanks very much. Good talking to you.